2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Welcome. This is Religion Today. I'm your host, Martin Tanner. Yesterday on TV, I saw this fascinating show about archaeology in the Middle East. And one of the points that was mentioned is about Gath of the Philistines, which is the city where Goliath was from. Now, I'd heard a bit about this from several years ago, but I had neglected to mention it on the air here, and I thought I would do so today, along with a number of other fascinating archaeological finds that, as they accumulate ever more, show that much of the Old Testament previously thought to be myth or legend turns out to be based in reality. First of all, a little bit of background. 50 years ago, 100 years ago, would have been the height of the time when most of the Old Testament was thought to be myth, and very little of it was believed to have been based in actual history. That has changed over time. Before that, of course, most scholars and others thought the Old Testament was based in history. And since that time, more and more people are coming back around to that earlier idea, but this time based on archaeology. This is a fascinating development. Today, I wanted to relate a number of different archaeological discoveries, which not only enhance our knowledge about the Old Testament, but also, in doing so, help increase our faith. So first of all, Gath of the Philistines. First of all, who are the Philistines? These are the people that live just a little bit north of Syria, who were sort of the archenemies of the Israelites. We hear about the conflict between David and Goliath. There are a number of different skirmishes and wars and battles between the Philistines and the Israelites. So who were the Philistines? This is something that new archaeology and modern science has given us at least a partial answer to. DNA tests from a number of skeletons found in this ancient city of Gath of the Philistines, which would be the Philistine city of Gath, show that they were, by DNA, related to the Europeans. So who are the Philistines? People who came down from the north. Exactly where, we don't know. Whether it would be Spain or Germany or Great Britain or even farther north, we do not know. But we know that the Philistines came from the north. That is a fascinating development that DNA has shown us. Also, the excavations at Gath are something that new science techniques have enhanced. Just a few years ago, a satellite image of the Middle East, and particularly the area surrounding Jerusalem, was reviewed carefully by archaeologists, and there was something that had not been seen before that was noted in the satellite photo. And that was that there's a siege wall around this certain hill, which turned out to be a siege wall around the ancient city of Gath. Now, Gath is mentioned a number of times in the Hebrew Bible. It's the place where Goliath, probably something like Goli from the city of Gath, Goliath, where he was said to have been from. And Gath is mentioned not just in the Bible, but it's also in the Amarna letters. And so we have reason to believe that this is a real place. Excavations ensued, and this is indeed the city where David's nemesis, Goliath, was from. Gath is mentioned in the Bible in Joshua chapter 13, verse 3, is one of these five main Philistine cities. It's also mentioned in Joshua chapter 11, verse 22. It's mentioned in a whole bunch of other places in 1 Samuel chapter 7, 1 Chronicles chapter 18. And so there are a lot of references, and now we know that indeed this is a real place. This was a real place. Now, the next great archaeological find that I wanted to mention as we move on from the finding of Gath and that the Philistines were from Europe, the Ugaritic texts. This is an amazing find. A great majority of Canaanite texts come from the site of Ugarit. And this is a place that is off the coast of, or by the coast of northern Syria along the Mediterranean Sea. Ugarit was a prominent Canaanite city. There have been major excavations that have taken place there. And probably the most important find at Ugarit are hundreds of texts that were discovered in the palace and temple areas. More than 1,500 of these tablets have been published. Now, why would that matter to us? Well, this city of Ugarit reached its height in about the 15th to the 13th centuries BC. And this is a fascinating time period because many of these texts have material that is very similar to what we find in the Old Testament. Not only that, we learn that there are a lot of parallels between the Canaanite and Israelite religions and the Ugaritic and Hebrew languages. So we can see from these Ugaritic texts ways in which we can interpret and understand the Old Testament that were previously unknown and very, very helpful for us to know. All right, moving on. The next fascinating find is a crucified man, or at least his remains that were found in an ossuary box, which is sort of the equivalent of a coffin, although it was made out of stone. This crucified man was a man named Yohanan, according to the inscription on the box. And one of the most fascinating things about it is that it gives us some details about crucifixion and that perhaps a few of our long-held beliefs may not be true. The main thing for Latter-day Saints to know, well, there are a couple things, is that according to at least a few scholars, although this part of it is debated, is that the hands, the arms, were nailed to the crossbar on the cross through both the palms and the wrists. Think temple for those who are Latter-day Saints. That is a fascinating find in and of itself. Another fascinating part of this is that contrary to popular belief in and outside of almost all Christian communities, the person who was crucified did not have their feet nailed through the fronts of the feet. We know this because the bones of this man, Yohanan, had the nails through the sides of his ankles, right below the ankle bone, through a piece of wood. The nail went through the side of the foot and then into the cross, and the same thing from the other side. So the nails in the hands, the wrists, and the sides of the feet are probably what one would see if you were looking at the remains of someone who was crucified. Now, does that mean that our ideas about how Jesus was crucified may be inaccurate? Well, perhaps, but perhaps not, because there may be a number of different ways that people were crucified. So this may not necessarily demonstrate that this was the only way or that this was what happened to Jesus. But on the other hand, it's highly likely that this is a representative way because it makes a lot more sense than nailing the front of somebody's feet together on top of a cross. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this. We're back. If you have a question or comment about this program or any other Religion Today show, or if you just have a general question about some religious issue or question, send me an email. Send it to martinstanner@gmail.com, martinstanner@gmail.com, and I will be happy to respond. Today's program centers around some of the major archaeological discoveries that enhance our knowledge that the Old Testament narrative is accurate in many, many places, and that more of its history than many scholars previously thought. Now, I hasten to backtrack here a little bit and say that we certainly know that some of the earliest parts of the Old Testament were allegory. Not too many people would say that Eve was literally made from the rib of Adam. This more likely seems to be some kind of an allegory that a couple, a man and a woman, were meant to be side by side, not one elevated above the other. But setting that aside, much of the Old Testament seems to be allegory. Much of it seems to be now rooted in history, and the part that's rooted in history seems to be growing. The next thing, the next archaeological find that adds to that list of things that have been discovered through archaeology that show that it's historical. Let's go now to the city of Jerusalem. The most dependable water source for Jerusalem during the Israelite settlement time, I'm talking now about, of course, early Israel, time from Jesus and much, much earlier, 1,000 years earlier. The most dependable water source was Gihon Spring, or the springs of Gihon. But its location was outside the city walls at that time, and during an attack or a siege, people in Jerusalem would have been cut off from their vital water supply. This is not a good thing. In 1867, the explorer Charles Warren discovered, and then along with him many, many others, how that particular problem was overcome by the early Israelites in a way that's mentioned in the Bible. So stay tuned here. So Charles Warren, in 1867, discovers this vertical shaft that was cut through bedrock, hand-chiseled, and it allowed the people of Jerusalem to reach the waters of this Gihon Springs from behind the city walls. And this shaft was probably built originally by the Jebusites and may be how King David's soldiers originally captured the city. Take a look at 2 Samuel chapter 5, verses 6 through 8. A new water system employing part of the earlier one was built by King Hezekiah near the end of the 8th century BC. This was done because of the threat of military conflict with Assyria. Hezekiah's tunnel, as this project is now called, sloped gently away from Gihon Springs underground to allow the water to flow from it to the famous pool of Siloam, which is mentioned in the Bible in connection with Jesus and at other times inside the city walls. Hezekiah's tunnel was cut by two different teams of chiseling workmen that came towards each other from opposite ends. and it kind of curves around. It wasn't done in a straight line. They didn't have all the amazing tools that we have today, and there were final adjustments. And finally, as they got close, they apparently met. There's an inscription about 20 feet from the Siloam Pool that's been recently discovered through archaeology that describes the meeting of these two chiseling teams. And so that's kind of cool. This archaeological discovery shows not only the Pool of Siloam is ancient in its origin, but also that this tunnel of Hezekiah was real, and how these descriptions that we find by a number of ancient Jewish prophets about water flowing from underneath the temple, how these could be literal and real. Next archaeological discovery. This is kind of a cool one. In 1872, a man named George Smith, an archaeologist, announced that he had discovered an Assyrian account. Again, Syria is north of Jerusalem along the coast. The Assyrian account of a flood, think Noah and the Ark, flood among tablets stored in the British Museum from excavations in the mid-17th century. This came to be called the Epic of Gilgamesh. And this epic story is 12 tablets long, with one tablet talking about the story of this big flood. The hero of this flood is a man named Upnashtim, and relates to this whole episode about Gilgamesh. And this hero, this man named Upnashtim, explains how the god Ah warned him about an approaching judgment, tells him to build this enormous boat to save his life from the water that's going to come in the form of a flood. This tale continues on, and in many respects, although not all, this Epic of Gilgamesh is very much like the Bible narrative in Genesis chapters 6 through 9. Now, the real question here is, what do we do with this? Is the Bible something that came from this Gilgamesh epic, or was the Gilgamesh epic that something that was later remade from the earlier biblical account, or were they both separate and talking about the same event? Those questions as yet remain unresolved, but here is, from outside the Bible, a narrative describing an event inside the Bible, one of those that many have thought is fable or myth, and yet here it is. We find it in a second place, the Epic of Gilgamesh. The next great find that I wanted to mention is the Lachish letters. In the 1930s, a fascinating man, Starkley, an archaeologist, excavated the site of Lachish. And he discovered a layer of debris indicating that there was heavy destruction, burned, fire, things. I mean, it was just devastation at this one layer, apparently at the hands of the Babylonians. How could that be known? Well, from spear tips, various things that were found that are associated with Babylon under King Nebuchadnezzar in the 6th century B.C., 589, 588, that's kind of the time frame they've come to. Now, what does this tell us? This tells us that the story that we have in the Book of Mormon that dates to right before the Babylonian conquest of Jerusalem was something that happened in other places as well. And this also tells us that the time frame mentioned in the Book of Mormon is right. And we also read in here that the description that we find at the beginning of the Book of Mormon about how there are all these prophets talking about doom and gloom under the impending Babylonian onslaught were actually real. We find them here in another source that is outside of the Bible and outside of the Book of Mormon. And it reinforces both. One last thing, and that is that I wanted to mention the Moabite stone. The Moabite stone was found in 1868, and a copy of it's in the Louvre. And in it, the text begins, "I am Mesha, the son of Chemosh, king of Moab," and it goes on from there. For Latter-day Saints, Chemosh is a fascinating name. Take a look at Omni in the Book of Mormon, chapter 1, verse 19. The shortest writer in the Book of Mormon, Chemosh, although a little bit different spelling, basically says, I've been given this record and I've got to write something, so I'm writing it and I make an end. I mean, it's just, that's paraphrase, but it's very, very short. Chemosh, how would Joseph Smith come up with that name? This turns out to be an accurate, ancient name from the time of the Book of Mormon periods. Archaeology not only demonstrates more of the Old Testament is true than we thought, but also more of the Book of Mormon is true than was previously known. Join me again next week. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.